Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
When the Santa's out. Welcome to another episode of Radio Contra, the podcast of AmericanPartisan.org and brought to you by BrushBeater.store. Really good to be in here, back in the saddle with all of you. Today is kind of one of those technical days. We're going to be talking about night vision, thermal. We're going to be going into that more in depth. IR lasers as well. Because, you know, we kind of touched on the topic yesterday, went into a number of other current events, things, and, you know, every so often, we really need to, you know, get that consumable content out there. Because, yeah, the current events stuff and kind of the social commentary and all of that is good to talk about, you know, obviously, because those things, the affairs of the polis, if you will, you know, the politics, the sociology breakdown, all that stuff, right? It is fascinating. It's a lot of fun to talk about, and, you know, it is on the minds of a lot of people. But, you know, we really need to focus on what we're doing about the problem. You know, as much as we do pointing out what the problem is, I mean, it doesn't really do a whole lot for us to point out that it's raining outside all the time. You know, like, oh, hey, you know, this is a problem. Yeah, well, let's talk about what we're doing about it. And training is always a cornerstone of that. Getting out there, you know, touching grass, getting out into the real world. That's always, you know, needs to be a big part of it. And, you know, you can catch my training schedule on brushbeater.store. And you can, you know, register for classes over there. There are a huge number of other trainers out there. And this is something that I've told people many times over. A currently serving command sergeant major who I've had in class, and I think the absolute world of. I'm so honored to have that opportunity to work with him, and having had him in class a couple of times now, you know, and it's really important. Something that he shared with me, and I think I covered this a few episodes back in an email that he sent, but something that I've said over and over again, kind of fighting off that black pill effect, you know, that downtrodden despair that a lot of people get, you know, oh man, you know, like everything sucks and all that, is the fact that there are so many trainers out there with GWAT experience, you know, the Global War on Terror experience, who are willing to share what they know. And, you know, they're not trying to get rich off of this stuff. You absolutely do need to pay for quality training, because I'll let y'all in on a little secret. Nobody values free. Okay. When something's free, they don't value it. And when you get something for free, quote unquote, you know, is usually there's limited applicability there. You know, and for those of us that are doing this full time, we got families to support. You know, this is what we do. This is our job. you know, but anyway, there's a lot of hidden costs in there and everything. But that, you know, the business end of it is what it is. Like there's always that aspect to everything. But there has never been a time in American history where there has been so many knowledgeable people who have practical experience at the business of doing business, you know, running guns and, you know, war fighting, small unit tactics. You know, there never has been a time, I think, that I can think of where we've had so many people with that level of experience willing to share it in a professional context. That's really the unique thing about this era. So, man, there's so many great guys out there. And, you know, fortunately, this community is one that's really taking advantage of it in a big way. And it's really awesome to see. You know, but with that said, you know, you really need to get plugged into the training community. Everybody does. You know, everybody does, because we can all get better. Okay, we can certainly all get better. There is no stasis that we remain in, some skill level. You know, if I go a week without dry firing my handgun, I'm rusty. You know, it's I have a routine that I follow. And here's the thing too, if I switch handguns, as sometimes I'm known to do, you know, if I'm running a Gen 3 Glock 19 with a Trigicon RMR on it, then I need to accustom myself to, you know, running that weapon, meaning that I got to do a lot of dry fire drills followed by live fire, you know, just slow fire, draw, slow fire, right? Working my way up, throwing some bill drills in there, doing some of the dot torture, you know, with the slow draw, and then engaging a target, right? But if I go back to a 1911, as I do every so often, because I love 1911s, well, now I got to reaccustom myself, right? You know, this is just one of those things about training, because 1911 is completely different, a completely different weapons platform from a Glock 19. Everything about it is different. Grip angle is different. The grip itself is different. Trigger pull is different. Manual of arms is different. You know, the manipulation of the slide after magazine changes is different, right? Using a slide release. The position of the hand is different. You know, it's so anyway, I don't mean to bore you to death with all that, but the point is that training needs to be the cornerstone of what you're doing. If this is if this is the route you're choosing, right? And I hope that all of you do. You really need to be putting training at the top of that. And that's just individual skill level training. You need to be doing that. You know, and, you know, moving forward, you need to get professional instruction in whatever that is, because I promise you, it is going to make you better. It is absolutely going to make you better. But what I want to talk about is night vision, because I've had many conversations with the companies themselves that are supplying the equipment at brushbeater.store. You know, our night vision is made by Elbit. You know, our Gen 3 night vision. I have Gen 2 night vision that's manufactured by AGM as well. And I'm going to be talking about night vision. I'm going to be talking about thermal and its role. And, of course, IR lasers, and kind of shed light on each one of these items, because I get a lot of questions. I get a ton of questions. And one of the really cool things when, you know, I have various company owners and dealer reps and people that talk to me, because when you're moving products at the volume that we are, and the, you know, brushbeater.store has grown as quickly as it has, and it continues to grow by leaps and bounds. This, I mean, we're still in our first year of operation. You know, we've only been selling night vision and thermal for about 6 months now. and we're quickly becoming, according to the companies that, I work with, you know, we're quickly becoming one of the big players in the night vision and thermal world. And that's all due to you, by the way. That's all due to you out there and the responsiveness of this community to what we're doing and how strong that bond really is. And I'm deeply honored by that. I spare no opportunity to point that out. But, let's talk about this. So everybody's first foray into the STANO world, and STANO is an acronym that we used in the Army. I know the Marine Corps uses it too: Surveillance, Target Acquisition, and Night Observation. Surveillance, Target Acquisition, and Night Observation. This is equipment frequently people will hear me refer to it as enablers, because that was what we called it, enablers. What you're putting on your weapon, what you are wearing, that enhances our natural capabilities, whatever they may be. For example, an enabler would be night vision that we're wearing. And when we're wearing night vision for movement, so a night operating device or a NOD, let's say in this case a PVS-14, and we now also have to have a way of aiming our weapon. And I'm going to be talking about that in this episode. So let's talk about night vision first, and kind of task and purpose oriented behind this, why you need night vision and why this is normally people's first foray into the world of STANO is normally some type of night vision. Because the way that they work, there's really two general categories of night vision devices out there. There is analog night vision and digital night vision. Digital night vision, I'm going to go on and say you should probably sidestep. Digital night vision's purpose is really for cameras and taking images. It's not really good for movement under. And I'm trying to caveat this because I'm not trying to stomp on anybody's toes in particular, but digital night vision normally is what's sold at very low price points, and kind of like those FRS radios that they sell at Walmart or Cabela's, they overpromise and underdeliver. Does it check the box? Like, oh, okay, I've got night vision. Yeah, sure, but you can do a heck of a lot better. And not only that, let's talk about why they're not so good. There's a digital processor in between you and whatever it is that you're viewing. And depending on how good that processor is on, very low end units, Psionics kind of comes to mind here. Some of their low-end stuff, ATN. And again, I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, because those companies do also put out some okay stuff. But typically speaking, their entry-level things are just, I think, a waste of money, in my opinion. They have to process the image first, and then you see it. And so you're not getting it in real time. You're not getting exactly, there's not 100% transference of what you're seeing. Not only that, you typically need an IR illuminator or an infrared illuminator for viewing things, when it is very, very dark. There's no ambient illumination. So, that kind of takes one of the big purposes in my mind behind night vision off the table, and that is movement, right? The purpose of night vision is movement under them. So then that kind of brings us to analog night vision, right? Analog night vision is what you see is what you get. There's a light amplification tube. The tube itself, you know, you're seeing everything in real time. Originally, night vision was green, because green was the easiest for the human eye to see in great detail at night, based on the available technology. And we're still, I mean, green tubes are still out there. You know, I carry them. I have green tube PVS 14s. I have green tube AGM Wolf 14s, which are the absolute lowest price, so very entry level price piece of kit that I have, and they're very nice for what they are, but that's kind of your entry level, right? There are two generations. Well, there's three, including Gen 1, but I'm going to tell you, with analog night vision, bypass Gen 1 altogether. Just don't. There's two reasons. One, you're not really going to see a whole lot when there is a complete absence of ambient light. And the second thing is that, and again, while it's better than nothing, for sure, it's a waste of money. I mean, why spend $700 on something that is not going to get me anywhere near where I want it to be when I can spend, you know, double that amount of money on, you know, AGM Wolf Gen 2, for example, that actually performs pretty well. So Gen 1, you know, kind of bypass that. Just, you know, just don't. Discipline yourself. Save some money. Yes, you can do it. Okay, you can do it. It sucks. It takes discipline. I get it. And we live in a society of instant gratification where, you know, some people saving money is a monumental task because they're constantly wanting to impulse buy things. But, and you know, Biden inflation and everything, I get it. But, you know, that discipline, you're able to save for stuff. Okay. Anyway, rant aside, Gen 2 night vision, you're going to see substantially better. I mean, it is, I hate to use the analogy, but it is a night and day difference better than the Gen 1 stuff, the older Gen 1 stuff, without a doubt. Without a doubt. All right. It just absolutely is. So while you might think that, you know, if I'm buying this dirt cheap Gen 1 unit from Sightmark or whoever is making it, you know, oh man, yeah, well, you know, you can do better than that. Because here's the other thing. If I need an IR illuminator on my night vision device to be running constantly for me to be able to see it, that's kind of like cutting on a giant lamp on your head and walking around with it in the dark. Everybody else with night vision is going to be able to see you from a long ways away doing that. So that's something to think about. Now, if you know, your only concern is like hunting coyotes or something, all right, you know, that is what it is. I do think that's good practice for night operations, but, you know, that's a whole other conversation. Anyway, Gen 2, I think, is the absolute minimum entry level. And I'm kind of loath, like, you know, not that long ago, I was pretty loath to even recommend Gen 2 stuff. Because I just figure if, you know, if I have Gen 3 available to me, why undercut myself? You know, because when you're jumping from Gen 2 to Gen 3, what you gain is first the tube longevity, generally speaking, not in all cases. And the Gen 2 units that are coming from AGM have a excellent longevity rating on them, followed up by a 5-year warranty as well. But, you know, what you are going to gain, though, is increased ability with limited natural illumination. So say, like, you know, you're running around at night, no moon out, no natural illumination, you know, going in and out of buildings. Gen 3 is really where it's going to shine. But that being said, if let's say, like, let's talk supply line here, because me having night vision is one thing, me being able to outfit other potential people in my working environment is another. That's another consideration, and that is something that I think about, because I need to be able to supply other people. One of those roles, by the way, because not everybody's going to be a trigger puller, not everybody's going to be shooting and looting and doing all the things. Some people are going to be in the driver role, right? You know, they're moving people around on the battlefield. For example, let's say, you know, the big shaboom kicks off and we have to move guerrilla fighters around the battlefield, mostly at night, by the way, mostly at night. 98.9% of the time, you're going to be moving people at night. And, you know, how are you going to do that in a rural area, for example? You know, well, your buddy with a dually truck and a cattle trailer, that's how you're going to do it. You know, that's kind of the standard of how things work in places where, you know, these skills are taught. And so that guy is probably, because he's a farmer, right? His whole cover for action, his lifestyle is built around being a livestock farmer. Man, he ain't running around in camos and all kitted up. But he still needs to be able to drive, and he might need to be able to drive with no lights on his truck. Well, that leads us to dual tube nods. So you have single tube, like PVS-14s. That's normally everybody's entry level into night vision. That's normally what people are getting. And, you know, they work really well. I was rocking PVS-14s for pretty much my entire time that I was in the Army. The aviators were getting dual tube stuff, and you started seeing dual tubes being run in, you know, like the tier one units and the SIF guys and SF. They were getting dual tube nods, but pretty much everybody else rocking PVS-14s at that time. And they were green tube PVS-14s. I remember when I looked through a set of BNVDs for the first time, and that was bridge night vision device, dual tube nods, essentially. And they were white phosphor. And I was blown away by that. That was my first time looking through white phosphor nods, and that was my first time looking through dual tubes in a serious sense and moving around under them. And the thing that you gain out of that is the depth perception. So when guys are running around in the woods and you know, they're doing all the SUT stuff, they can get away with PVS-14s. You can absolutely do it. And one of the things to keep in mind, too, is that rocking a set of PVS-14s is not super heavy on the head. And so let's say, like, I have to cover a huge amount of distance on foot, you know, at night, those 14s are probably going to do me pretty well. But if I'm driving and I'm going to be, you know, doing things that require a significant amount of depth perception, dual tubes are kind of mandatory. There's a reason that the aviators were issued dual tubes and, you know, we're doing that. And that's also why a lot of times guys that were assigned to a driver role, at least back in 2006, 06, 07 time frame when I was coming in, a lot of those guys that were still driving, like driving 1114 Humvees and stuff, they were actually rocking PVS 7 Deltas because it covered both eyes. They had a better depth perception to be able to drive under nods than with PVS 14s. So that's something to think about. You know, so dual tubes really come in handy. And I'm going to go on and say it, man. The AGM Gen 2 dual tubes that I got in at the request of Scott from Council on Future Conflict, who is a career enlisted infantryman, then became a cavalry officer, and is a current serving public affairs officer in the Army. He's a lieutenant colonel. You know, he said, "Hey, man, you know, I'd like to get a set of the Gen 2 dual tubes because of their price point, and I know what that capability is." And that's what he was looking at. So I picked up a few sets of them, and I was really impressed. Really, really impressed with it. Now, are they on par with the 1431 white phosphors? No. I mean, the FOM rating, which is that detail rating that you're going to get, how much detail you can see under complete darkness, that FOM rating is not going to be anywhere near as high. The 1431s that we carry are rated at around 2200 per tube, which is really, really high. You know, PVS 31 deltas that we carry are 2400. But and those tubes are coming from Elbit, by the way, which is one of the major manufacturers. So anyway, it's all current production stuff for the United States military, United States government, and that's what we're getting in. But anyway, that's the whole conversation, you know, dual tube nods versus single tube nods, and then the generations. What should you buy? Again, it always boils down to buy what you can afford. Okay, buy the best that you can afford. And I would say that your point of entry into night vision really needs to be the you know, if you don't know anything, and this, you know, you don't really have a budget planned out, but you need to get something in hand, you know, you do know what that need is. And I still do believe that night vision should be your point of entry into this world. That should be the first thing that you get. Thermal, I'm going to talk about in a minute, is a very close second. It's kind of like peanut butter and jelly. You really want to have both of them, but night vision really needs to be your point of entry. That ability to see and observe at night, and the ability to move in real time at night, is the whole purpose behind night vision, and that's really what you need. That's going to be your point of entry. So, you know, Gen 2 is the absolute minimum. I wouldn't go, you know, any cheaper than that. And if you can afford that upgrade to Gen 3, then that's really what you need to be looking at. That is absolutely what you need to be looking at, because it's going to pay off. I'm telling you, it's going to pay off. You know, just like I said on the podcast yesterday, if we had known in, you know, 2010, for most of 2010 and into the large part of 2011, that when I was in Afghanistan, that the Taliban had nods available to them. It was always kind of rumored, but we never really knew. We would have changed up our TTPs, of our tactics, techniques, and procedures, because that's a huge uptick in the threat, right? Once we did know, just like I was talking about yesterday, once we did know, then it was like, oh man, you know, now this is a real threat, and we got to change up some of the things that we're doing. That leads us to IR lasers. All right, so you're wearing your nods, you can observe at night, you can, you know, do all the things, you can move in, you know, under darkness, and you're enhancing your natural night vision, all that stuff. All right, cool. How do you aim your weapon? So, you know, passive aiming, kind of mixed results there. Some people can do that. Some people can't. It is kind of an acquired skill. And, you know, I'm not going to say either way. I'm just going to say that with a red dot, it's a challenge. And if you think that you're aiming precisely outside of CQB distances, well, I think that you're going to be disappointed with passive aiming. Now, there are clip-on night vision units, PVS 22s. That's kind of another conversation, though. that's kind of another conversation. And I do have PVS 22s coming from AGM that are Gen 3 units. They are excellent, and they're white phosphor. So, you know, that level of detail in those is absolutely incredible. But that's another conversation really unto itself, and you know, a whole other, that's a whole other thing. So, and I want to kind of sidestep that for a minute. For what most people are going to be doing, moving and kind of running a fighting carbine, right? You know, let's say home defense scenario, or, you know, the shaboom is going on, and you're shoot moving and doing all the things with, you know, your fighting carbine. You need some way of aiming that is other than passive. Now, you know, we've all seen the footage coming from Ukraine. The guys that are, you know, they have the little IR laser detector that they're able to wear. I know that we were fielding IR laser detectors in Afghanistan. I know for a fact we were, and we had them up on the blimps so that when an IR laser was emitted, it was detected, because it is a wavelength. It is a frequency. There is RF that is generated by it, right? And it can be detected. So they were doing that so that it was kind of an early warning way to know when there were troops in contact, and get you a kind of the idea of where that contact was. That's the purpose behind that. That's why we were doing that. So the technology absolutely does exist, but anyway, and I'm sure that that's going to trip some people's tinfoil hat radar, like, well, why should you even have an IR laser in it? Well, because you still need that way of precise aiming, right? And the way that you run an IR laser in the dark, right, under NODs, is the exact same way that you would be running a light in a low-light gunfight scenario. You don't leave the laser on, just like you don't leave the white light on, right? You illuminate the target, fire your rounds, do your business, and then let off of it. That's the way that it works. So I'm up, he sees me, I'm down, right? That kind of deal. Know that that points two ways, but then again, your muzzle flash also does. So that's also something to think about. Another conversation to be had about suppressors, right? But point is that you need that IR laser. Now, there's a lot of makes and models out there. There's a whole conversation that could be had about full power IR lasers versus civilian class 3 lasers, so on and so forth. I'm going to tell you this. Full power lasers, you really don't need them. What ends up happening if you run too much power, you're going to be washing out the target at close range. There's just, you know, there's really no point in that. I don't think I ever, when I was in, I don't think I ever ran a laser in high power mode. PEC 15. I can't recall ever doing that, because the times that we did need it, the reason that it had that upgraded power level was so that we could illuminate distant targets for air munitions, right? For indirect fire, like JDAMs or, you know, CCA, close combat aircraft, right, helicopters. We could illuminate targets for them to engage from long distances away. But the thing is that we had a soft lamb for that. So if we were doing that, we had other ways of marking the target. So I don't recall ever doing that. So I really don't know why that's that big of a deal in a conversation. What is a much bigger deal is having an IR illuminator that is really bright on that laser. And fortunately, with the U.S. Night Vision Designate IRV, that illuminator is extremely bright. So everybody that's been down on my range knows that you know, we have about 600 meters from the firing line, you know, the 100-meter firing line, where we zero and we do a lot of our work in the scout course, fighting carbine course, so on and so forth. But there's about 600 meters. If you were to look to the left, to the north, you'd see about a 600-meter distance or so to the next wood line all the way across that field. And during Kay from Combat Studies Group, during his night fighter course, I was playing around with the IR Illuminator. We were just getting some trigger time with it. And we were illuminating that tree line from that distance away. And we were all really impressed by that. And doing a side-by-side with my PEC 15, you know, no comparison. No comparison. You know, and IR Illuminator is one of those things that, you know, when you're doing CQB under NODS, you're definitely going to want that. Now, there's other ways to get around it. You know, running a white light, maybe, or a tack light, rather, with an IR bulb in it, you can do the same thing for less money. But there's a weight penalty there, and you also have now two different points of failure, potential points of failure. So having it all in one unit there is really a big advantage. But talking about an IR laser, you know, that's how you're aiming. Right, that's how you aim. You're not using the optic anymore at that point. You are aiming with that IR laser, and you have to zero that individually. Now, you can get it on paper by, you know, lining up the laser to the dot. You know, if you're running a red dot or your crosshairs or whatever, knowing that there's going to be a little bit of an offset, you can get special targets that have that offset so you can make your adjustment. Right, but you need to be firing live rounds to make sure that that laser is zeroed to the weapon as well as the optic, because they are different. They have different focal planes on them, right? You know, your optic has height over bore. That's why when we say, you know, a bullet rises, quote unquote, it's not that the bullet is rising from a distance. You know, like 100 meters, your point of impact is going to be 2.5 inches roughly above where your zero is at 25 meters with a 5.56, roughly, with some distance, I'm stumbling over my words, with some you know, deviations in there for you know, all the reasons. But that's actually not correct. It's your bullet isn't rising. It's the fact that your height over bore is now becoming a factor, right? Your bullet's actually always falling. Anyway, with a laser, though, because a laser is straight, it doesn't really bend. There's no arc to it. And it is sitting typically much lower on your weapon than your optical plane is. So you have to zero that individually. There's always going to be an offset there. So, you know, taking all that into account, one thing that I think is an absolute must is having an IR laser that has a visible laser on it. That is how you zero. All right, so the visible laser is connected to the IR laser. When you adjust one, you're adjusting the other, and you put it on a visible laser. That way you can do it during the day. It's not as big of a pain in the butt to do that as it is if I only have an IR laser. That is a big pain in the rear. Okay. Big pain in the rear to zero that thing. Can you do it? Yeah. I've done it. The old PEC 4, PEC 2, you know, that was what you had to do with them. It was a pain in the butt. It's doable, but there's a better way to do it these days. And that's why when the PEC 15 came out, we started getting fielded those at the end of it had to be the end of 2007, early 2008 was when we started seeing the first PEC 15s. Very first PEC 15 I saw was a class that we did with Jerry Barnhart in Eva Beach. So that had to have been 2007, late 2007. Or maybe it was early 2000. I don't know. I digress. Great. That was a great training experience, though. The legend, the burner, Jerry Barnhart. was that was a real eye opener, and that laid the groundwork for a lot of skills that I would utilize later on, and you know, now teach much of the same things on fighting carbine course. But anyway, point behind all that is though is that, you know, having an IR laser that you can zero with a visible laser, and that's the only time you're ever using a visible laser, because it ain't like Hollywood where, you know, oh, all of a sudden there's a red dot on me. Oh, you know, it's kind of silly. You know, it doesn't work that way. But just keep in mind that just like a white light in the darkness, and a laser, IR laser, if your enemy's wearing nods, points two ways, points right back at you. So it's definitely the up I'm seeing, you know, up I see him, I engage, now I'm down, right? That brief moment in time. You know, it's laser the target, fire your rounds, now I'm off the target. That's how that works. Designate IR and the Designate IRV are both available at brushbeater.store. I have a sizable inventory currently on the shelf of both. I went on and bought a huge stock of them because they do sell very well. And I think that they are one of the most technologically advanced lasers on the market right now. And the way that I found them was I was looking for a very low profile laser to run on an AK. Could not really find one. And, you know, everything kind of sits up high. I wanted an IR laser that I could mount on an Ultimac rail or an SLR Gunworks rail down low so that I didn't have to, you know, use this giant chin riser, you know, to get a chin weld on a red dot, which is, you know, the AK optics are already sitting up kind of high on them anyway. It's just a little bit of a challenge. And, you know, you got to use a riser if you're trying to mount an IR laser on there where I can index it with, you know, either hand, because we train in ambidexterity, you know, without having to mount it on one side or the other of the weapon and not use a pressure pad, right? Because anytime that I can get away from using a pressure pad, I'm going to do so. So that really only gave me a couple of options. B.E. Myers Maul was one. But they're very cost prohibitive, and I just couldn't see spending that amount of money on an IR laser when I already have others in, you know, in my own personal inventory that fill the role. I just kind of have to fight with them a little bit. Then all of a sudden I found US Night Vision, and that's what led to dealer partnership and you know, the success that we've had. But that laser sits down very, very low, so I can run it on an AK, and I still have a red dot there, you know, whether that's a Aimpoint T1 or, you know, Holosun 403 or whatever, mini red dot down low. The footprint of my daytime optics and my IR laser is very small, low profile, and I don't have to change anything. And I still have all of that functionality. It's very low profile. It's lightweight. Integrates seamlessly with, you know, my preferred setup with the AK. And I don't really have to change the way that I manipulate that weapon under nods from when I'm running an AR as well. Right. So, you know, we kind of distill our weapon setups down to, you know, one particular way where we're running an IR laser, you know, up top and out front so that I can index it with my support hand, you know, whether that is my left or my right hand, right? I can index my laser and continue doing that so that I have that ambidexterity in that fight. And that reduces all the fluff that's on my weapon too, by the way. I don't have to worry about pressure pads and all that stuff. But anyway, you know, there's other IR lasers on the market. PEC 15 certainly is one that's kind of been the mainstay. It's combat proven. It's, you know, I've been running one for a very long time now, and they're definitely proven. Anyway, shifting gears, I want to talk about thermal. And thermal is something that, you know, in years past, I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought because the technology really just wasn't there. I was used to using PASS 13, which, you know, guys from the mid-2000s and you know, early to mid-GWAT era will remember the PASS 13. It was huge. It took like a dozen AA batteries, had a very short battery life. It was, you know, and you got limited results with it. I mean, the idea behind it was solid. Could you, you know, get some decent target detection with it? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that was its purpose in life, right? So night vision's purpose is for movement. Thermal's purpose is for target detection because you are not hiding from thermal. I don't care how many of these, you know, hot pocket, tinfoil things come out there that people say you can move under. You ain't doing that in North Carolina summertime, okay? Even at night. I'm just telling you. Not with all your kit on and, you know, I hope that you have IVs prepped and ready. Because you're going down, if that's going to be the thing, right? But the way that you do hide from thermal in your working environment, if you're out in the pine jungle like I am, you know, natural vegetation is the best way to hide from it. The wintertime, you know, obviously it's kind of limited, but with evergreen, you know, you vanish into it. And we do this in the scout course, by the way. We practice thermal detection and evasion in the scout course because that it's a thing now. The thermal technology that we have that is common off the shelf is really incredible, and I've been blown away by it. You know, what it does, what it's able to do now, what, you know, with the processors and the thermal imaging devices themselves, the heat sensors are just so much better than the technology in decades past. With that said, understand that thermal is also a digital processed image. So this is not something that you're going to be moving under in real time. Now, there's very little noticeable lag on most of the units that I have run over the years, from FLIR to now AGM, IRA with the MH25 series with their clip-ons. Pulsar is another one that I've got a lot of hands-on with. They are very good, right? But that comes at a cost, a significant premium. I think one of the best bargains right now for the money is AGM, and that's why I sought a partnership with them. The other companies are really good, but you're talking about a serious investment there when a lot of people are already buying night vision and now you're having to budget for something else. I think that in this day and age, you absolutely need thermal. You absolutely need it because it is so proliferated everywhere else. There's a lot of other guys that are using it, and its ability to detect targets is just it. I mean, I hate to call things a superpower because I think that's kind of corny, but it is true. Like that's the best way that I can put that. You know, one of the neatest devices on the market is the Stinger. The AGM, stumbling over my words a little bit. I've either had not enough coffee or too much. You know, you ever hit that point where you're like, have I had enough coffee or have I not had enough? I'm not sure. But anyway, the AGM Stinger, right? This is one of the most versatile units on the market. It is the same housing as the old FLIR Breach, but the FLIR Breach is no longer in production. And what is on the shelf, there have been some people that have pointed out, well, I can get the FLIR Breach at, you know, whatever it costs. Well, maybe you can. You're getting new old stock. And is very limited in what it comes with. The Sting IR, both in 384 and 640, comes with a clip-on mount, comes with a dovetail mount for running on a Wilcox G24. You can observe with it. And we've got bridge mounts that are going to be available soon. And I'm going to be talking more about that as we get closer to the rollout date of those, right? So you could run a PVS-14 on one eye and thermal on the other. That's a big advantage. Now, I spit some numbers at you. Let's talk about it. So the entry level into thermal, a lot of people look at thermal in terms of the resolution. That's kind of the identifier behind it, and that's part of the equation. So the entry level into that is 256 resolution units. I kind of consider this like the Gen 1. Does it give you that capability? Absolutely. Is it better than nothing? Yeah. And it, you know, it works pretty well. However, with a 256 resolution, you know, you need to really understand what you're getting and what you're not getting. The actual positive identification of targets is probably not going to be there past 200 meters or so. You're just going to start to see heat blobs. The actual target discernment is not really going to be that great. You're going to know that something's there for sure. But as far as positive identification goes, you know, I would say that it's limited. I do offer one 256 unit, and that is the AGM Rattler clip-on. All right, let's talk about going kind of up from there. The 384 and the 640. 384 resolution, 640 resolution. 384 is kind of what I would consider the Gen 2, and this is really the one that I advocate. You know, 640, absolutely. If you can afford that's the one you need. But for most people, the 384 is absolutely going to get the job done. You can run this in front of a daytime optic as a clip-on, and you know you still need to confirm zero because you're introducing another focal plane in there. So your point of impact is going to change a little bit. But now I'm able to observe through my daytime optic on my weapon with that clip-on sight in front of my daytime optic. So this adds a lot of capability, and because it's small, you know, I can still use it as a handheld to observe, you know, kind of the same way I would any other monocular. I can take pictures with it. I can take videos with it. So this is another really important factor. If I'm conducting surveillance of a target, which you're going to be doing more often than you do all the shooting and actions on stuff, you're going to be doing a lot of surveillance stuff, a lot of surveillance missions. Taking video, taking pictures under thermal is a huge, huge deal, right? And the more detail we can get, obviously, the better. The 640 is really the Cadillac in that regard. So it's a multi-purpose piece of kit, works very, very well. And, you know, I think that it's awesome technology for a very affordable price. The Stinger, you can also run in this role. It's recoil safe up to 5.56, so you can run it on an AR. It'll work for that. You know, obviously nothing too much bigger than that, you know, or else it might, the internals might suffer some damage. But because of its size and its form factor, whole lot of versatility there. Whole lot of versatility. So I wanted to shed a serious amount of light on what I offer in the store, the roles of each one of these things, why I offer the products that I do, why I don't offer certain other products that I could and people have asked me for, but you know, I just really don't see a purpose behind it. This is why. Okay, this is why. You really need to be investing in first in training and then in the technology. Get the underlying skills first, then get the technology. Okay, because I'm telling you, if this is how everybody's fighting now, and we've been fighting this way for a long time, most of the activities, the actions on, you're going to be doing at night. You need to have the technology. Don't handicap yourself. Have one rifle. If you're that guy that's sitting on, you know, a dozen AR-15s, or let's say even more than one AR-15, and you don't have at least some Gen 2 night vision, you need to start listing them things on GunBroker and piling up some cash and getting yourself some night vision. Like, there's no excuse. There really isn't. And saying that, you know, all that stuff's expensive. Well, I mean, it's not that much more than a decent AR, or two, you know, it just is what it is, man. But, anyhow, folks, with that said, Brushbeater Dice store, everything is over there. The stuff that is out of stock right now, you know, y'all keep cleaning me out. And it's a good thing, man. I'll order, you know, 10, 15 units. They'll sell out. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, beginning of the week turns around and I'm having to place yet another order. And it great problem to have. But anything that is out of stock, you can sign up for the back in stock notifications and you will get an email delivered to your inbox that will tell you when they are back. They do sell out quick. So anyhow, with that said, folks, have a wonderful week. Sons of Liberty is going to be live tonight, and I'm really looking forward to getting back on the air. God bless all of you, and I'll talk to you again very, very soon. Zensi Scout out.